Welcome to this episode of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. This podcast is going to be a little bit of a blended conversation. Unlike normal episodes, this one will have competition talk, your normal firearms talk, but it's also going to talk about the current affairs in USPSA as well. My guest comes by way of Area 4. He's a rare find in that he shoots irons. I know, weird, but it's okay. We won't hold it against him. He's a practicing lawyer and is not afraid to publicly scrutinize the board of directors when necessary. This might get interesting. If you would, join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Bill Godbold. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. I appreciate it. I hope my intro was fairly spot on there.
I think so.
Okay, good. If you would, take a moment and introduce yourself.
My name is Bill Godbold. I live in Central Arkansas. Mainly shoot production. I have been shooting some carry optics lately, but production's still the best division. I've been shooting USPSA since late 2018. Went to a match and just fell in love with it, and have, you know, never looked back. So I've been practicing law for 10 years. So I ran for Area 4 in the last election and lost to Mel. And that's about it, I guess.
There's some stuff there we can unpack as we go.
I'm a pretty boring guy.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. All right, Bill, I'm not sure if you've listened to any episodes, but I like to hit you with the more difficult questions right up front.
Okay, good.
Make people stutter and try to figure out where they're going. So, favorite movie?
Man, that really is a hard-hitting question. And I did listen to some of the old episodes, so I knew this was coming, and I still couldn't nail it down. So I've got a couple. Gladiator.
Ooh, good one.
Like that's a good, like, solid, serious movie, right? And then Tropic Thunder is one of my favorite comedies.
180 degrees the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's completely the other direction. Tropic Thunder, I think, is basically like a modern Blazing Saddles. You know, you talk about how you can't make Blazing Saddles today. I don't think you could make Tropic Thunder today either.
And probably not.
Like 10 years ago, 15 years.
Cancel culture would eat it up.
Yeah.
I have learned that people don't tend to read anymore, whether it's because of podcasts or audiobooks or whatever, or Spotify. You can listen to radio anywhere now. People don't seem to read books. You're an educated man. I'm sure you've read a book or two. What is your favorite book?
My favorite book. That's I'm going to give you two book series. I like the Horatio Hornblower books. And I like the Aubrey Matron books, the ones that Master and Commander, that movie was based on. So they're kind of, you know, the Age of Sail, Napoleonic War, Royal Navy type books. I like those. I also read a lot of science fiction. Starship Troopers is a favorite book of mine. So I read a bunch of different stuff.
Book or movie, which one's better?
Starship Troopers?
Mm-hmm.
The book is better. Starship Troopers movie is a fine movie, but it's a terrible adaptation of Starship Troopers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's nothing like the book. My understanding is that they were going to make a generic sci-fi, space marine killing alien bug movie. And then somebody said, oh, we should tie it into Starship Troopers and license it to that and make some extra money from that. And I don't think the director even read the book. He read like the very beginning and said, oh, this is garbage. I'm not going to finish it. And didn't read the book.
That's very interesting. I enjoyed the movie. I have not read the book, so I wouldn't know that. But I mean, do they have a naked shower scene with every single person in the military in the book?
No, sadly.
Do you hear the story behind that?
No.
So the actor said, we'll only do this scene because all the actors, I mean, there were a few that were in the movie that weren't in there, but most of them were in that shower scene. Like all the ones in the platoon were in that shower scene naked. And they were like, we'll do it if everybody on the set is naked. So everybody on the set got naked. Whether you're recording or being filmed, filming or being filmed, you were naked. Crazy.
That's crazy.
That is, but I guess, hey, you know, I guess it made everybody feel more comfortable. So pretty funny. You're into sci-fi. Yeah. So maybe you're into superheroes. I don't know. If you are, who's your favorite superhero? If not, who's your favorite historical figure or both?
The superhero movies lately, I haven't been watching them. Like I quit watching the superhero movies after the first one with Thanos in it, where he kills like half of, so CERN Thanos won. And, yeah, I mean, there's the Marvel Cinematic Universe is just too big. There's too many movies. I can't keep track of it all. I've, you know, this is like my old man yells at cloud. I mean, Batman is a great superhero. You know, he shows that the best superpower is money. One movie that it wasn't really a superhero movie that I thought got kind of a short. It got some bad reviews, but it was the John Carter of Mars, that movie with, I don't remember who was in it, that came out maybe 10 years ago. It was a pretty good movie, I thought, based on the book by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And, you know, people were criticizing it because, you know, it's just a ripoff of Superman and these other superhero movies. And it's like, well, all, you know, the Superman comics were based on these novels. So it looks like a ripoff because they were ripping off him first.
Favorite gun and favorite caliber of all time, but they don't have to be linked together. They can be completely separate.
Favorite gun. You know, I've never seen one or shot one. I would like to get one at some point. That Mateba auto revolver, like that somebody made a semi-automatic revolver. That's just amazing to me that somebody would do that. I don't shoot revolvers. Like just the idea of it. It's like, why would anybody think to do this? I don't know. But that it exists is kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of it. You said Mateba?
Yeah.
Mateba auto revolver. Well, I'll be darned. Is that what we're talking about?
Yep. That looks like it.
I had not even heard of this thing.
But it's semi-automatic.
That's pretty wild. Mateba Model 6 Unica, or the Mateba auto revolver. Recoil-operated semi-automatic revolver. That's wild. Designed in 1997. Well, that's a new one on me, so very interesting.
And favorite caliber? I don't know. 22, I guess, because it's so cheap. And, I mean, it's great for getting new people into shooting. I hardly ever shoot 22. I pretty much just shoot 9mm all the time. But 22 is great for getting new people into the sport.
It is. It's a fun little round. And like you said, it's very inexpensive. So, okay, I'm going to totally switch gears. The fifth question typically make specific to the guest coming on. You are a bankruptcy lawyer, and I'm sure you've seen your fair share of that stuff. So if you could give people one bit of advice to keep them out of bankruptcy court, what would that be? And it doesn't have to be legal advice. I mean, just in general.
Prepare a budget, like a monthly household budget, and don't just go off of, oh, I spend, like actually sit down with your bills and your pay stubs and look at how much money you have coming in and how much you have going out. Look at your bank statements. Don't just go off of, oh, you know, I spent $100 on cable internet a month. You know, don't go off of round numbers. Actually look at where your money's going and look at all of the small stuff you're spending money on. I mean, the small stuff, it's cliche to say it adds up, but you know, we used to have, there's so many streaming services. It's like, well, it's, you know, it's $10 a month, $12 a month for Netflix. It's like, okay, it's $12 a month for Netflix, $13 a month for Amazon Prime, $15 a month for Hulu. By the time you get to, you know, all the ones that have the shows you want to watch, you're at more than what cable would have cost. And, you know, we used to think, well, you know, I'm going to cut the cord, not pay for cable, just get streaming services. That's going to save me some money. And now, because it's all so fragmented, you're spending more money on that stuff than you would have thought. But like right now, and this isn't really going to keep somebody out of bankruptcy, but if you are at the point where you are having to raid your retirement, like you have a 401k or an IRA or anything like that, and you're having to take early withdrawals that are going to be penalized, you're going to have tax penalties from that, you might want to think about talking to somebody about what your options are, because generally in bankruptcy, you can protect over $1 million in tax qualified retirement accounts from your creditors. If you take that money out and use it to pay down your creditors, you know, you're going to end up with a tax bill that you're going to have to pay. You're going to potentially not be able to pay everybody in full and possibly have to file bankruptcy anyway. And depending on the timing, if you have to file bankruptcy within a short period after you make those payments to those creditors, the trustee can come and get that money that you paid. Like you took that money out of your 401k, you paid your creditors, and then you had to file bankruptcy. The trustee can take that money, or trustee can come in, sue those creditors, get that money back, and then pay it to all your creditors so that they all get like a equal share. I mean, you're still in bankruptcy. You still don't have the money, and you didn't pay off the people you thought you were paying off. It's terrible. I've seen people who have, you know, they emptied their retirement accounts. They still had to file bankruptcy, and it's awful.
So it sounds like budgeting is the number one thing.
Budgeting is big. Don't do any rent to own stuff. Any of those buy now. We joke about it. You know, you visit even shooting websites. You know, I think Grab a Gun has one. You know, these short term financing things where it's, you know, you can order something and pay for it in like 5 easy payments or something like that. It's like the interest rates on those are super high. Don't do that.
All right. Now to the fun stuff.
Okay.
Have you always lived in Arkansas, and did you grow up around guns?
No to both. So my dad was in the Navy. So I moved up and down the East Coast, mainly in Virginia Beach while he was stationed in Norfolk. And we also were in Northern Virginia for a few years. And then...
Oof.
Yeah. And then when he retired, we moved to Arkansas because my mom's family's from here.
I assume Northern Virginia because of the Pentagon and all of that.
The War College in D.C.
So was Northern Virginia Fairfax or Alexandria?
Woodbridge.
Oh, okay. That's where I work.
Okay.
I work for Prince William County as a firefighter paramedic, which includes Woodbridge.
Yeah, we were in Woodbridge in... 80, 89, 90, I think. It's been a while.
Been a minute.
Yeah, I don't remember very much from Woodbridge.
Let me think here. In 90, I was renting an apartment in Woodbridge. I was 22 at the time.
Okay.
Newly married. Woodbridge is a far cry from Arkansas. How did you end up in Arkansas?
So my mom's family is from Arkansas. When my dad retired, we moved to Hot Springs Village. It's a retirement community. You know, he'd been in the Navy 22 years. And he decided he wanted to move somewhere where he could play golf every day. So that's what he's been doing pretty much ever since. Went to junior high and high school in Arkansas. I went to college here. Eventually went to law school here. And
at what point did you find firearms?
So when we lived in Virginia, I was in the Boy Scouts. And at summer camp, I shot 22s. But, you know, that was many years ago. I didn't really get into firearms until I was an adult. And that was probably around 2010, 11-ish, during the Obama administration. I got into firearms then. I'm like, well, if you're going to tell me I can't do something, that's going to make me want to do it even more. I was like, I don't know anything about guns, but I'll buy some.
Just to spite you, I'm going to get one, damn it.
That's exactly right.
I'll show you.
And I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. And then a few years later, it was in 2018, I helped out a friend of mine with some legal stuff. It was another lawyer. He was working on some debtor-creditor issues that he wasn't familiar with. So he asked me to help him out. And as a thank you, he said, you know, come out to this shooting match. I said, I don't know anything about shooting matches. He said, don't worry about it. I've got a gun, holster, ammo, everything you need. I'm like, okay. So came out to the shooting match and had a great time.
How nervous were you shooting? So you're not even really all that familiar with guns, but, and here you are, someone else's gun, holster, everything else, shooting in your first match. How nervous were you?
Well, I mean, I'd done shooting, you know, just standing and shooting pistols at a, you know, like a
range
but I was pretty nervous. And then you watch people who've been doing this for years shoot, and it's like, oh man, that was fast. It's like, I got to do that. And then you try to do that, and it's like, I didn't hit anything. Like, but that was fun.
Hooked. <Yeah. laughs> So what gun did he have that you borrowed to shoot with?
I think it was an XD. I think he had some kind of maybe a 5-inch XD that I think that's what he has for new shooters.
How did you like it?
It was fine. I didn't know anything. It's like, seems to work fine.
I've owned a few of them. I like them because they fit my hand well. I don't think they shoot as nicely as mechanics do, but I do like the gun. Like, I would own another one. I liked it. So how long between that and you getting your first quote unquote competition gun and gear set up for shooting matches?
It was probably within a month. And I want to say that, you know, he talked me into signing up for like an IDPA major match. That was like if it wasn't the next month, it was like 6 weeks away. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. He's like, don't worry, it'll be fine. And I was like dead last. My total time was like 600 seconds. It was awful. Just because I don't know what's going on. But I didn't get DQ'd. So,
well, that's a plus.
Yeah.
What did you purchase for competition?
The first competition gun I purchased was an M&P, 5-inch M&P 2.0.
Sounds like you're not using that now.
I'm not. I shot that for a little while, and then a lot of people around here were shooting CZs, so I got a SP-01 Shadow and shot that for a year or so. And then I got a stock 2, and I've been shooting the stock 2s since late 2020 or early 21.
I assume you feel that every step has been a progression with the pistols.
I think so. The CZ still has the best trigger of any gun I've got. But the Tanfo, I think it fits my hands better, and it was easier to make fit my hands, and I like how it balances a little bit better. But the trigger on the Shadow is the best trigger I've ever. I mean, it's great.
Now how is the Tanfo is all steel, right?
Yeah.
So how does that recoil?
It's,
I assume, flat.
Yeah, it's pretty flat. As long as I'm gripping it right.
Right, of course.
If, you know, if my mind's not on what I'm doing, it's like, well, what is going on?
That's like anything. If I'm not paying attention to what I'm eating, I will wear it. So I'm going to ask this question now, because I wrote it down as soon as you confirmed my thoughts that you were shooting production. What are your thoughts on the change to the rule of production 15?
I've only been able to shoot one match with 15 round production since the change. It didn't really change a whole lot. There were some stages where you could kind of force, like if you wanted to, you could make it where it was like, you know, it's a 30 round stage. You could do one reload. That wasn't the natural way to do it. You know, there's enough spaces with movement where it's, you know, it makes sense to shoot like 11 and then shoot 8 or 12 or whatever, and then do a reload because there's a couple steel at the last position, whatever it is. But it didn't really seem to change a whole lot. You know, on a 32 round stage, you're still going to have to do a couple reloads.
I feel like you have to strategize the reloads a little less. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe help out a little bit on steel, but everything I'm hearing so far, people don't feel like it's changed a whole lot of anything.
Yeah, it seems like it just gives you a couple extras before you're going to have to do a reload that you were going to do before. I don't think your plans will change that much. Now, on short classifier stages, you know, or short courses, you know, if you got a 12-round short course, it changes that. You don't have to reload at all. For a lot of other stuff, it doesn't seem to change it that much. Of course, like I said, I've only shot one match. We'll see what I think after I shoot some more matches.
Do you have any major matches coming up?
I'm signed up for the Kentucky section match or state championship or whatever they're calling it, the one that Leif's running. I'm shooting the Arkansas section match. Right now, there's the only two USPSA majors I'm signed up for. Our club's hosting the Arkansas IDPA championship, so I'm going to shoot that since it's right here. But right now, those are the only three on my calendar.
How do you like IDPA?
It's fun. I don't really travel to shoot IDPA. It's not fun enough for me to drive 2 hours to shoot a match, whether it's a local match or a major match. If a local club is hosting a major match, I'll shoot the major match at the local club. But the rules are a little silly.
I think there are a couple rules, if they changed, it would make it a little bit better. But I do enjoy it. Like there's obviously a lot more prop use. And when I mean prop, I don't mean like swingers and stuff. I mean like props, like lawnmowers and other things like that. So
here, hang on to this fishing rod and this bag full of sand. And you got to carry this bag of sand all the way across the stage and drop it on this plate to activate a target. Why are we doing this?
One of the funner ones I've done, though, was the start position was both hands on a lawnmower. And at the start, so when the timer goes off, you had to push the lawnmower forward, and that activated a swinger right in front of you. Then you drew, put two on the swinger, and then moved through the rest of the stage. So I do like little things like that. Like it just adds a unique twist to things.
Yeah. I shot one, you know, the idea for the stage was very creative, but the actual implementation was not conducive to match flow. They had you started seated at a desk and your gun was in a desk drawer. And when you open the desk drawer, that activated the desk drawer that your gun was in. You open that desk drawer and that activated either drop turners or swingers or something. And it's like, that's all well and good, but that meant that you had to make ready, put your gun in the drawer, shut it, and then somebody had to go and reset all the stuff. It was a neat idea, but it's like, that's not really ideal.
Maybe an unloaded start would be better.
Yeah.
that could be a little unnerving.
They did make you, when your gun was in the drawer, there's a drawer on either side of the chair And so on one side, your gun would be pointed 45 degrees to the right, and on the other side, it'd be pointed 45 degrees to the left. So if you're right-handed, you put it in one side. If you're left-handed, you put it in the other. And then whoever was resetting would have to go around the other way so that they weren't walking in front of a loaded gun. Like, this is a lot of hoops to jump through for a start position. And it had backed up the whole match.
I feel like you'd almost be better off cutting a hole in the top and making a flap. So once every, you know, you could leave the drawer set, set everything up, open up the flat, put the unloaded gun inside or loaded, whatever, close it, and then use the drawer to activate, you know. But I do like the different unique things that they do with it. So it is, I do enjoy it. It's just shooting. It's fun.
Yeah, it's shooting. And it's a little bit easier to get new people involved, I think, by bringing them to an IDPA match.
Yeah, a lot less running and gunning.
Well, yeah. And it's kind of on rails. Like, you know, this is the stage. This is, you have to go this direction. Like, this is the path you have to take through the stage. And these are the targets you shoot. And this is the order. And if you take them to a USPSA match, it's like, all right, go nuts.
Yeah, totally different.
It's like, you know, when the beep goes off, shoot a ball.
I think the fact that when a new shooter sees people, some, not all, but they see they come to a match and they see people moving and shooting simultaneously, you know, from point to point, that can be intimidating for a new shooter. Whereas, like you said, IDPA, you're not shooting and moving. You're moving, then shooting, moving, right, then shooting. So it's a little easier for them to digest and go, oh, okay, I just move from A to B, then I'll shoot the things and go to B to C. But I do think that's one of the rules that I think if IDPA changed it to where you could shoot on the move between cover, if that's what you want to call it, it could be allowed, but you're not allowed to stop. And the whole retaining your magazine, I don't think is really pertains to much of anything.
Well, you don't want those bad guys to get your mags.
Right. Because, you know, every mag fits every gun. That's right. So
you might need those bullets later.
Right. Oh, to egress, because I'm not hanging around.
Yeah.
What are your goals in... You and I have been shooting USPSA about the same time, because I got into it late 2018 as well. September of 2018, to be specific. But what are your goals with USPSA?
I want to have fun, and I want to get better. Those are my goals. I usually do okay at the first one, and... You know, when I actually practice, I do get better, but I, you know, I do my daily dry fire like once a month, whether I need to or not. So when you're only practicing once a month, you don't really get that much better.
I see you have dry fire targets up there on the wall behind you.
Yeah. And, you know, they're never used. There's not a mark on them.
Oh, have you taken any classes or anything?
I've taken a couple of, I took a Ben Steger class in 2020, and then I took it, the fundamentals class. And then I took the, I think it was the fundamentals class again. I took it last spring.
How'd you like that?
It was good. I had a good time. I learned a lot, and, you know, I am better. I'm a lot better than I was when I started, and I was better, you know, last spring than I was 3 years prior, but you know, if I were practicing, I would see consistent improvement instead of periodic improvement, we'll call it.
Now, do you get to do dry fire, live fire much other than at a match?
Yeah. I try to. I try to get out and do live fire. Ideally, I would do it once a week. Usually it's probably every other week. Other than in a match, my club is it's a good club. You know, you can go out there pretty much any time, and we don't have a whole bunch of members the way a lot of clubs do. So anytime you go out there, if there's not a match, you've got a bay to yourself, so you can do pretty much whatever you want.
So I live about 30 minutes south of Woodbridge. Around here, the ranges all have wait lists. Like, and I don't mean like, oh, you'll be on, you know, you can join in 3 months. And I mean like 2 year wait list. Like you have to wait for people to die to get into these places.
That's awful.
It is awful.
Our range, we've got, I want to say 80 ish members, I think. And we've got 14 pistol bays and a 200 yard rifle range.
Wow. So nice.
But we've got a pretty good club. You know, we put on steel challenge match, USPSA match, and IAPA match every month.
Do you shoot much steel challenge?
I did when I was first started. Since COVID, I haven't really shot a whole lot of steel challenge. When I first started, I was shooting production pretty much all the time, everywhere. And then when component prices went through the roof, a steel challenge match got really expensive. If you're shooting center fire, I need to get out to a few more steel challenge matches and shoot rim fire. I just haven't fitted into the schedule lately.
I think it is the best match. If you have a good flowing match, because there's a place around here that does it, and I haven't been there in a few years, and someone different runs it now, so it might be faster paced, but it would be pretty slow, like a 30-minute wait between stages. And you know that then you're there all day to shoot literally five stages. You're there to all day, and it just gets monotonous. But I don't think there's anything better for draws, transitions, shot calling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With that five bay match, it's like 25 drills of shot calling, transitions, and draws.
Right.
There's definitely benefit.
Yeah, I enjoy steel challenge too. It's fun, and I especially enjoy that there's no taping.
They're just spraying.
But I mean, I like shooting production. I like shooting carry optics, and shooting 9mm at a steel challenge match is just so much ammo.
So what do you, when you shoot carry optics, what are you running?
I have two production stock twos, and I have two carry optics stock twos. I shoot stock twos for everything.
What are you running for optics?
SROs.
Had good luck with them?
I had to send one of them back. It wouldn't hold zero. And then Trigicon, I think they sent me a new one. I don't think they repaired it. I think they just sent me a new one back. It took about 4 weeks.
I've had good luck with mine. I like the SRO. It's a good sight. I've got a few others that I've purchased to try to do some learning with, but last year I've had some knee issues from injuries on the job. So I haven't shot since last March, but I look forward to being able to get out there and putting rounds on these other guns with the different optics to see how they all work together. Do you shoot any other competition?
No.
Have you ever considered anything else? Any rifle stuff, any carbine, anything? PCSL, two gun?
We ran a few PCSL matches. Our club didn't decided not to hold anymore going forward until it gets a little bit more nailed down. So we'll see what happens with it in the future as to whether we start holding more PCSL matches going forward. I like PCSL okay. I mean, it's more hit factor scoring. I only shot at one gun. I didn't shoot two gun. So I have rifles. Ever since I got into pistol shooting, you know, practical pistol shooting, I don't think I've shot my rifles except maybe like one or two times. It's just, it's so much more work to lug all the stuff out. It's more expensive to shoot them. It's so much more work to set everything up to shoot them. I could just throw the stuff in the back of the Jeep for, and set up a couple drills for pistol, and it's way faster.
Yes, agree. That's why I switched from rifle to pistol. Much easier, much simpler, much cheaper. Did you ever get a chance? Have you shot Leif's, what is it? The Bluegrass low cap. Have you shot that one?
I haven't shot that one. I wanted to shoot it last year, but I couldn't make it work with my schedule. I heard it was a good match though.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about all the matches he runs. So seems like he's got it down to a T. Now, you mentioned that you ran for Area 4. So what made you run for Area 4 this last election cycle?
Let's see. So that was in 2022 that I ran. And I don't remember what exactly was the catalyst that made me run. But, you know, I'd started following the minutes, and, you know, the minutes at that time, I think, were pretty sparse. It was hard to tell what was going on. It was my impression that a lot of times nobody ran in these elections. Like, it was, you know, they were mainly uncontested elections. So either the incumbent would decide he wanted to run and nobody would run against him, or somebody would decide they wanted to run and it would just be that person, and then they would get it. It was like, well, I don't know if anybody else is going to run. I'm going to throw my name in the hat because I've got professional experience, professional knowledge that I can offer the organization. That was my thinking. I mean, I don't travel. I travel around. I've shot major matches in Missouri. I've shot them in Oklahoma. I think I've shot one in Texas. So I've shoot maybe two or three USPSA majors a year. I don't travel around and shoot all over the place. So I don't have a whole lot of connections. I mean, I know some people from Louisiana and Texas and Oklahoma, but I don't know everybody in the area.
Right. So lacking the name recognition per se. Like some of these guys who travel around in RO a lot of places, they know a lot more people. Their name gets out there more.
And at that point, I had been shooting since 2022 when that election was. So I'd been shooting less than four years at the time of the election. And I was running against Mel, who's been shooting for much longer. And so he travels all over the place. He's got the name recognition. I don't.
That's hard to compete against. Do you still have aspirations to run again in the future?
I would like to. I don't know if I'll run next time. I'm not running in the special election this time for a couple reasons. Work has gotten pretty busy. And also, I don't want to get involved in a lawsuit. Like, USPSA is in a lawsuit right now. And I deal with that all day at work. I don't want to deal with it not at work also. I mean, it would be different if I were a board member already. It's like, well, you know, that's part of the job, but I don't have to go and seek it out.
Now, have you considered just applying to be on a committee?
I have. I sent my name in for consideration for the bylaws committee. They went a different direction. We'll see if they ask for any other people for other committees. And depending on what they are, I might put my name in for those as well.
I guess before I get into the rest of it, I got to ask, I had heard that people were streaming the board to other platforms, and I saw that you were doing one to Twitch last Monday. So that was the 26th, and I think that's right, 25th, 26th, whatever day it was now. So I got on, see, you know, what it's about, because I was curious. Why do you do it? In your words, why do you do that?
I do that because if you're just watching the live stream, so the first day they live streamed the board meetings, the very first in January, it was a 2-day board meeting. They live streamed on Monday and I think on Wednesday. The Monday portion of the meeting, I was talking to some people and, you know, we were kind of commiserating, you know, there's no common chat for the meeting. There's no way to talk about what's going on. Everybody's watching it kind of separately. It's not like if they were live streaming it to YouTube, there'd be like a live YouTube
commentary. Yes.
Where the viewers could leave comments and talk about what's happening in the video, that sort of thing. And my thought was, you know, I could essentially rebroadcast it and provide commentary on what's happening like my views on it, whether it's legal or just what I think about what's happening. There may be some, I don't think there's any copyright issues with that. That's fair use. You know, if I were just rebroadcasting the meeting with no commentary, that would be one thing, but you know, it's a meeting, I'm talking over people, I'm saying, you know, this is what they're talking about. And, you know, I'm switching between tabs and looking at old minutes and the bylaws and Robert's Rules of Order. And I'm switching between all kinds of different things. I'm not just looking at the meeting and we're not all just sitting there listening to the meeting and typing in chat. You know, I'm talking about what's going on, my thoughts about what's going on. Oftentimes cracking jokes about what's going on. Chat is able to watch the stream and also crack jokes and ask questions. And sometimes they'll see something that I missed, or, you know, hear something that I didn't hear because I was talking or looking at something on a different tab or what have you. And I thought it was a way for a group of people to watch the live stream together and talk about what was going on in real time, and that the USPSA wasn't providing that. So I decided to provide that.
And I did like it because we ended up indirectly communicating because I forget how it came about, but we ended up getting on the topic of Delaware law and annual member meetings and how it appears that under Delaware law, nonprofits holding an annual member meeting allows where voting occurs, allows for members to make motions to actually remove board members.
Right. That's what it looks like to me. Now, I'm not licensed in Delaware.
Right. That's why I said appears. Yeah. Allegedly.
Right. Allegedly. And bylaw 7.7 makes a reference to that. You know, it says under 141K or whatever section of Delaware law, and you go and you look at that section and it says, you know, at the member meeting or the annual meeting, the members can vote to remove a director. And it's like, yeah, the bylaws say that there's a way to do that. The bylaws say that under this section of Delaware law, the members can remove a director. But how do USPSA members go about removing a director by voting? I don't know how to do that. Do we email Donna and ask for a petition to remove Frank? If you don't like what Frank's doing, do you email Donna and say, hey, can I get a petition to remove my area director? How many signatures do you need? Does it go on the ballot for just Area 7 members to vote on? Does everybody get to vote on it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. But that, and I will say that is one of the aspects of what you were doing that I did enjoy, because let's just take it, because there's a lot of talk in the board meetings that I've seen that, you know, bylaw this, bylaw that, or, you know, Delaware law or whatever law, blah, blah, blah. It was nice where, look, I can Google it, but who knows if I'm actually on a correct page or an updated law page, and I feel more comfortable when there's someone who understands the law that's like, okay, I know I'm on the right page. I know I'm reading the right thing. Right. And you can have that discussion.
Right.
I appreciated that. That was the first time I had actually watched, and there was no board meeting being streamed, but we still had other conversation going on. Now, with the minutes that came out yesterday and with Ken Cobb's Facebook Live that he did, there's talk of a delayed stream. I don't know if they mean like time delay, like you would see on live sporting events so that they can beep out bad words or whatever, or if they mean like a 24-hour delay. I'm going to assume like a 24-hour delay. Now, do you still see, I do, but do you still see value in doing like a Twitch stream of that?
Yeah, I see value in that. I mean, that would be just like, you know, if there's a sporting event that's, you know, drastically different. Like if you watch F1 racing, you know, the race is at whatever time in Australia, you can either watch it live at like 5 a.m. or you can watch it on a time delay at a normal time. Like, I think there's still value in rebroadcasting the time delay version and commenting on what's going on. I didn't watch Ken's live stream. It was, I think it was going on while I was streaming last night. So I didn't really, I heard some stuff about what he was talking about. I didn't watch any of it.
My wife and I, you know, we take time every evening. We just sit down and we watch stuff and hang out and chat and whatever. Which is why I saw that you had posted something too about having Kurt McKenna on. I didn't see that. I didn't see Ken's thing, but I went back and I joined yours late. Kurt was already gone, but I mean, like 2 hours later.
He was on audio. He wasn't on video.
I went back and was able to watch Ken's, because, you know, when you do a Facebook Live, it stays there. It's a post, so you can go back and watch it. So I did watch it. I listened to everything he had to say. And whether people agree with what he said or not, I still appreciate the fact that he did it, because I have no personal issue with Russell. I like Russell as a person, but he's very silent. There's nothing, you know, you're not getting anything but what's in the minutes of what, however he voted. So there's no way to know what he's thinking or anything. So at least, like, I love it when Ben does his commentary on his podcast about meetings and what's going on in USPSA. Greatly appreciate it. Same thing with Ken. Whether I agree with what he says or not, I appreciate the fact that he took the time and did it, because most don't. So I appreciate that. Now, where I really see on the time delay where it could be a benefit is where you would be able to pause the video, have interaction and discussion, and then restart it. Even, you know, you could chop it up and cut out all the crap that doesn't need to be discussed.
Right. Exactly. With it on time delay, you could pause it. You could have instant replay. You know, it's like, let's back that up and let's right. have the Ben Berry say right. that again. But I'd be looking at the minutes from, I think it was Monday's meeting. I really kind of wish that it had been on video, because some of these discussions, in particular, the bylaws committee one, they voted, just going off the timestamps on this stuff, like there was nominees for the bylaws committee. The first one was passed unanimously at 9:31 Eastern time. Second one passed unanimously at 9:32 Eastern time. And the third one failed, 2 yes, 4 no's, 1 abstention at 11:33.
An hour discussion
two hours.
Yeah. Two hours.
Discussion. Yeah.
And this is where some people might label me a conspiracy theorist, but this is why I feel that in some cases they don't want the live streaming, because, and I think Ken actually made a post somewhere about it. I could be wrong, but I think it was Ken who said, on camera, people aren't going to necessarily say what they want to say, which I think is wrong.
I think he did say that on Facebook.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I think as well. But I think that's why they don't want the live stream, because they can say things that they wouldn't normally say, which I disagree with. If you're not willing to say it in public to people's faces, then you shouldn't be saying it. And is it factual if you're not willing to say it?
I kind of wonder if this not being live streamed is part of the reason the meeting took so long. Like, would they have had a 2 hour discussion? Was it a discussion? Was it a shouting match? What was going on?
Would they have gone into executive session?
Yeah.
To have that discussion?
If it had been live streamed instead of.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a good question.
I love the live stream because that's what we don't get from them. Look, the minutes are 1,000% better than they were just a couple years ago.
Oh yeah.
Thank goodness. That is a positive change. Love it. But what you still cannot capture is what is the discussion? What is being said? Why did somebody's Why did somebody be disapproved, you know, get a no vote after 2 hours of discussion? What in the world was said? Because that person is coming on soon, and she sent me her resume and her application, and I read through them. And I was like, impeccable. So clearly there's some feelings involved.
That's my guess.
Yeah, it's my guess too. My guess, my opinion. I don't know, but that's what I'm assuming. And I'm going to throw it out there now, Bill. My opinion and my feelings are you might be in the same boat. So maybe, I don't know. I don't know to what levels anybody is in this boat, but I do feel like there's a, I'll use the word list. I'm not saying there's an actual list, but like, okay, these people are persona non grata. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now,
from what I have heard about Ken's live on Facebook last night, the organization is not a fan of the Twitch stream.
No, definitely not.
I almost think that they didn't think anybody was going to watch any of the
board meetings.
Board meetings,
yeah,
and that's why they're like, "Yeah, we'll broadcast the board meetings. Nobody's going to watch them. They're super boring, and then we can just go back to not broadcasting." And now people are watching them, and now they're kind of in a catch 22. It's like, well, we've gone 3 months with broadcasting them. What are we going to do? Not broadcast them, everybody's going to be mad because now they've gotten used to having the video of the meetings available.
I wrote a letter to the board after one of the incidents. I posted it publicly, and Leighton called me. We spent like an hour and a half, 2 hours on the phone. Good conversation, very pleasant. Ted Murphy called me after that. We didn't speak for nearly as long. Pleasant conversation. Didn't necessarily agree on everything with everybody, but my point is that it was a pleasant conversation, no issues there, and Leighton might not like what I'm about to say now, but you can't sit there before the live streams happen and say, I want live streams, we need transparency, and now voting no for live streaming and transparency. You can't do that. You can't have it both ways. If Donna, and I'm just saying Donna, if any employee, I'll remove her name from that. If any employee doesn't feel comfortable with their face on there, okay, just disable the camera. It's still a live stream with audio. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because there was, while there was commentary that they didn't like the Twitch stuff, people restreaming to Twitch, there was also comment that, you know, people were being mean, spirited, and ugly about people in the stream, on the stream. So, and thinking back to the social media fallout after the first live stream, I think I know what they're talking about.
I know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I do too.
My main criticism, and I'm going to say of Donna, regarding the first, I don't remember if it's the first live stream, or if it was just the first meeting, like the whole January meeting, is that she said that the board had said something about getting paperwork done to change the name back to the old organization name because the registration with the Delaware Secretary of State had lapsed.
Right. I remember that.
Somebody else had taken it. And accounts and everything were supposed to have been transferred over to the new name, which I don't remember what the new name was, but it was, everything was supposed to have been transferred over to the new name of the organization. And in that first meeting in January, where Donna, I think somebody said that the old name of the organization was now available and they were going to get, the organization was going to get its old name back.
Yes, that was Donna.
Donna said that, well, the board said, well, we need to change all of our stuff back to the old name now. And I think Donna said that she didn't change any of the stuff back. She didn't change any of the stuff to the new name because she thought that this was going to happen. I couldn't believe that she said that. there's no guarantee that the name is going to, the old name is going to become available. So why are you not transferring? I don't know if it's bank accounts. I don't know if it's insurance, whatever it is. If there's paperwork that has to be in the name of the organization and the name of the organization changes, you need to do that paperwork to get it into the current name of the organization. You don't just sit on it because you think the, especially if the board tells you to do that. I mean, I couldn't believe that she told the board that she didn't do her job and nothing happened. And I don't think I made fun of her for it. I just said I couldn't believe that. It blew my mind that that happened.
Yeah, I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. But there is a phrase, hostile work environment, that, as I understand it, has been used. So I think that kind of throws a widget into things, because I know from where I work, as and now it's a government entity, but whenever those words are used, it changes the entire dynamic. People have to get involved. And I don't know that the USPSA organization is set up to deal with those kinds of concerns. So I think that changes the way things are handled, if you know what I mean.
Right. And I think it does. However, to my knowledge, I don't think that Donna was being made fun of for any illegal reasons. Like, I don't think she was being made fun of because of her sex or her religion or her country of origin or her sexual orientation or, you know, any of the bad reasons, you know, the L7 reasons are that constitute harassment under hostile work environment. Like if a customer is making, is harassing an employee, an employer is supposed to take action if it's for one of those reasons, right? You know, if some customer is harassing an employee because the employee is African American or is Jewish or what have you, if it's one of those protected characteristics, then that can constitute a hostile work environment, and the employer has to take action to stop that. If it's not any of those things, it's harassment in the, you know, colloquial everyday sense of the word.
It's not an EEO violation. Correct. Right.
Correct. And that's my understanding of employment law, which is worth every dollar that you paid for it.
And I have actually been involved in one of those things. I wasn't accused. It wasn't me, but I've been involved in one of those investigations, and you are correct. If it doesn't meet one of those specific criteria, then it's not an EEO issue, and they basically bow out, and then it's just a complaint that has to be worked through. So it does change things. Now, along those same lines, because Ken mentioned that there were physical harm being threatened, and that there was libel and slander. Now, I had to think for a minute because I'm like, wait a minute, slander is spoken, libel's written. So I'm like, are they saying libel like someone typed on a keyboard on the internet, this person was whatever? Is, you know what I mean? Like that one I didn't get. Spoken, okay, maybe, but I don't know how. But those were the three things that they were, that Ken mentioned: libel, slander, and threat of physical harm.
Yeah, I don't know anything about threats of physical harm. I don't think anybody.
I don't either.
In Twitch chat, like, I certainly didn't make any threats at all.
I have not either. So I've not heard of it. I haven't seen it. I'm just saying those are the three things as to why they didn't want to live stream it at the time. So I'm not sure exactly how that would work. So, and I don't know if ugly and mean-spirited was I've seen the social media bingo cards, and I could see where those might hurt some feelings.
Yeah.
But again,
I think that those are meant to hurt feelings.
I do too. I don't get involved in those. That's not my style, but you know, people can, I guess, express themselves how they feel. So you would still offer your commentary on a delayed stream.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's still value in that.
Now, I did some copyright research back in the 90s because I was writing a bunch. That was when I was teaching long range rifle, precision rifle before it was cool. So I was creating a lot of stuff, looking to put together a book of stuff and looking into copyright law. That's when I found out that, you know, basically any data you come up with, like numerical data, can't be copyrighted because you use formulas that are public domain. You can only copyright the format you put it in. So, you know, I was looking into a lot of different things like that, but.
Well, so if they were to record the live stream and then make it available to watch later, I don't think that there would be any copyright issues with rebroadcasting and commenting on that.
It has to be for monetary gain, doesn't it?
Right. I'm not getting paid for this. It's fair use. You know, USPSA is a nonprofit. It's a member-driven nonprofit. I'm doing this for the benefit of the members, to explain to members what's going on in board meetings and talk about the current state of the organization. I'm adding value, like I'm adding to the live stream. I'm not just rebroadcasting it. If they were to, like you said, a recorded one where I could pause it and then explain stuff and back it up, that would actually be a lot easier to justify as fair use because I would be able to pause it and back it up and that sort of thing. Instead of having to just talk over everybody, and do it in real time. It's kind of like people who, will, you know, they'll watch a live music, performance on YouTube, and then they'll pause it and talk about how the musicians are, you know, the instruments or the, what they're, you know, the reaction to the song, you know, this is what they're playing. They pause it and they add their commentary, and, you know, if they were just replaying the music video or whatever it is, they would get copyright strikes and their YouTube channel taken down. But because they're adding additional information and additional value, it's fair use. It's not an infringement. It's an allowed use of whatever the copyrighted work is.
I kind of feel like it should almost be supported in that way by the board. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would think that a good board would want members who are informed about what the organization is doing and how it's being run.
Well, and I would almost look at it, to be honest with you, as an educational platform at that point, because you're not just they're getting the information, but now they're being educated as to what does that really mean? How does that apply? Now, had you considered being part of the finance committee?
Not really.
I know you're at the other end of it, but I mean, I still see where, because of where your investigation, that's not the word I want to use. That's just the word I'm using. But when someone does come to you about, say, a bankruptcy protection or whatever, there has to be some investigation prior to that as to what they've done, what their actions have been, things like that. I still think there's value in what you know there to also assist the org in what I'm hearing, the lack of structure within the finances themselves.
Right. Although I will say that, you know, the lack, it sounds like the organization has problems generating, you know, routine reports, profit
yes.
loss, all that stuff, which makes them, unfortunately, similar to a lot of my clients, I mean, a profit loss is essentially a budget for a business. And, you know, if you're using QuickBooks for your business, you can hit a button and generate a profit loss. I don't think this is that complicated if they're doing the work to put everything into the software.
Well, and it did sound like in Ken's Facebook Live that they are starting to try to put things into QuickBooks now so they can do generate those reports.
Okay. Donna's been, and I don't mean to pick on Donna, but she's in charge of the budget and the finances, essentially, as the managing director. And she's been managing director for, what, a year and a half?
Probably about a year and a half, close to it, yeah.
At least a year.
You said you haven't watched Ken's Facebook Live.
I haven't.
It appears as though, based on watching it, and I was able to, because it was pre-recorded, pause it and go back.
Right.
And I heard what I heard, which is, sounds like they're installing Andy on Monday.
Okay.
He actually used Andy's name.
Oh, he said Andy's name.
He said Andy's name, I think, which was a faux pas.
Yeah.
Which is French for oops.
Right.
Thoughts on that?
At least our long national nightmare will be finally over. You know, it's not the answer I would have preferred, but it is an answer. And I mean, we've gone a little over three months almost with,
yeah, it'll be 3.5 months by the time Andy, assuming it's Andy, okay, I'm using air quotes for people just listening, for him to be installed since they removed Scott.
And then the good people of Area 3 will finally have a director again.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you're in Area 4, I'm in Area 8, so neither one of us can speak for people in Area 3. But I wonder if that does anything to quell. I wonder if with Andy being there, assuming that is what happens and that's what Ken meant, I wonder if Andy being there will actually help get things righted and moving. It'll be interesting to see the reaction.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see. And it'll be, hopefully things will... I think a big part of the problem has been just the lack of a clear answer. I mean, I personally don't think the 7.7, I don't think the board can remove other board members. I mean, I'm not a Delaware attorney, as I've said. I'm not licensed in Delaware. I know how to do legal research. That's what they teach you in law school, is how to do legal research. You know, you look up cases, you look up statutes. I don't think there's any case law on whether these Delaware cases saying that only shareholders can fire directors. I don't think there's any case law applying that to nonprofits. And so my guess is that is what the memorandum, the legal opinion from the Delaware firm is going to hang its hat on and say, no, we can't really say it's going to cost a bunch of money for somebody to sue over it to find out. And we don't think you're going to sue over it. We don't think Scott's going to sue over it. So it's probably fine. I mean, this is 100% speculation on my part.
Yeah, it's a different situation for sure. But again, maybe with at least Andy being on, then at least they'll feel better that there's somebody there, even though it's not, even Andy would rather Scott be there. So it'll be interesting, because I didn't look in the bylaws. I don't even know. I know he can't run, according to the bylaws and what they've said, he can't run for office again.
Yeah, I don't think he can run for office again ever.
Right. I don't think so either. But I'm wondering, can he be on committees?
I think he could be on committees as long as the board
approves it.
And, you know, he can't run for office under the current bylaws. So if the bylaws change and that that part saying if you've been removed under 7.7, you can run for director. If that's removed, then he would be able to run for Area 3 director again. He'd be able to be actually be Area 3 director again. And that's the problem, is that the bylaws say if you've been removed, you can't be an officer or a director.
In 9 months, the board's going to have a different look to it again.
Right. I mean, it, turning over, what, 4 or 5 board members by January?
Yeah, I think 4 more. So
they're having special elections for 1 and 4. And then
you have Area 2.
2 and 5.
And 5. That's 4.
Andy coming in for Area 3.
Right, assuming that that is what happens. If you were in this situation now, let's say you had gotten elected and not Mel. I don't know exactly what the situation was with Scott. And I don't know that we'll ever know exactly what the situation was. But how would you have liked to have seen that handled?
Not the way it was. Good God.
Well, yeah, the entire country.
It smacks of, selective prosecution. Because we have the internet. It's 2023, 2024. We know that Rio Salado was announcing that it was going to have IPSC Nationals before they were supposed to announce that they were going to have IPSC Nationals. Those leaks had to come from somewhere, right? They didn't, a birdie didn't tell them. I mean, who's their area director that was pushing for them to host IPSC Nationals? We can connect the dots here. We're not dumb.
And I've had this conversation with Yi Min a couple of times where I think that, look, I get there are some things that need to actually remain confidential, you know, whether, and it might just be the negotiations they have with contracts. Like that should be kept.
That stuff.
Quiet.
Yeah, identifying information.
Yes.
Actual employment information for org employees.
Yes. There are certain things that are mandatory by law you must keep private. But then there are other things I get that, you know, maybe the org doesn't want to announce. But I told him, I said, there needs to be a level. Like when, just like with the federal government and the military, not everything is top secret. But that also doesn't mean it isn't sensitive. But there's a difference there. You know what I mean? Like if you really feel that this information getting out is actually going to cause damage to the organization, bink, top secret for director's eyes only. May, you know, something else comes up is like, look, this is sensitive. Hey, you know, you stamp it sensitive and you're like, just be careful how you talk about this. It's not top secret, but just know that if you don't fully understand this situation and you talk about it in public, you might get people upset.
And, you know, the bylaws are kind of vague. And, you know, someone cynical would say that they are vague on purpose, you know, so that anything can be made to fall under the umbrella of confidentiality.
Yes. And I don't even think that's a conspiracy. I think that is the reason why. And I'm not saying it was put in there maliciously. There may not have been any nefarious intent whatsoever. It's just like, hey, who knows, in the future something might come up that doesn't fall in these categories that needs to be confidential. Okay, I get that, but still there needs to be a better system, because like you said, after those 2 or 3 items, then it's just like, oh, or anything else we deem necessary to call classified or confidential.
Yeah, so confidentiality, all financial information, employee information, membership lists, and similar matters shall remain confidential. Open session boardroom discussions shall remain confidential until the minutes are released or approved for dissemination, unless otherwise approved by a 3/4 majority of the board. I mean, the financial information one, like really all financial information?
No.
Like some financial information, yes.
Right.
Membership lists. I'm generally okay with that because we don't want people scraping the membership lists, right? We don't want them selling that to third parties. Although I think under the terms of use, USPSA can probably do that already, because I think that's a pretty standard term. You sign up for our thing, we can sell your information to a third party.
I thought there was a blurb at the end, or was it just the "or similar matters"?
No, I don't see it in front of me.
Okay. I may be misremembering, to quote the Biden administration.
I mean, we do need to keep some stuff confidential, but we don't need to keep everything confidential. And keeping everything confidential has contributed in large part to the culture of conspiracy theories and
distrust. Yes.
And distrust that is rampant. It's like live streaming the meetings was a step in the right direction towards fixing that. And then they turn around and stop live streaming the meetings. And the first response from everybody is, what are you trying to hide?
Discussion. That's what I think. And that's just my opinion. I could be totally wrong. And it's interesting because the word fiduciary has come up quite a bit lately. Ken used it multiple times last night. It's been used in other places. So I was like, okay, I'm going to Google fiduciary because I want to see exactly what different meanings there are. And it was interesting. One of them I found was ethicsunwrapped.utexas, so universityoftexas.edu. And they have a fiduciary duty is the legal responsibility to act solely in the best interest of another party. Fiduciary means trust, and a person with fiduciary duty has a legal obligation to maintain that trust. In this situation, if the members are the shareholders, your fiduciary duty is to the members of the organization. It's and it's funny because it says, for example, lawyers have a fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of their clients.
Right.
And in this situation, the client would be a member.
Right. So the members of the board have a fiduciary duty to the members and to the organization and to the members. What it looks to me is that they are focusing on their duty to the org and ignoring their duty to the members. They're saying, well, we have a duty to the organization. It's like, well, but the organization is made up of members. Without members, there is no organization. And for example, Ken was posting about, I think it was Corey Yates, the Louisiana section coordinator, his actions about the
outlaw or hit factor. Yeah.
And how as section coordinator, he's got a duty to USPSA. And it's like, well, he does, but all he's got to see why the clubs aren't forwarding fees to USPSA if they're holding USPSA matches. I don't know what he's supposed to do if they're not, like give them a stern talking to. You guys really need to forward those fees onto USPSA. Can he kick them out of the section? If all of them are protesting, he kicks them all out of the section. Like, okay, he's done his duty as section coordinator. Now he is section coordinator with no clubs in his section. It's like, this is absurd.
Yeah. So I found it interesting that, you know, you could look at it a couple different ways, but I do feel there are some board members that feel their fiduciary duty is only to the org and the members are not the shareholders. Like, the board members are the shareholders and everybody else is just a client.
Right. The members are customers.
Customers. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Customer.
You decide not to spend your shooting dollar at USPSA. Well, have fun at PCSL and IDPA. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
When, as I look at it, the fiduciary duty is to the members. And how do you maintain that trust? How do you fulfill that obligation? Well, that's keeping the organization strong. That's how you take care of the members. So how do you do that? You do whatever's to the best interest of the members that will make, that will keep the org strong. You're not overspending. You're being frugal.
Right.
You know, those types of things keep the org strong and pays back to the member. So I don't think that in every situation they're looking at it in the correct light. Is there anything that the org isn't doing that you feel they could do to expedite the repair process other than an Area 3 director?
Well, yeah, we got to have directors. The repair process is going to be slow. We didn't get into this position overnight. We're not going to get out of this position overnight. It's been years of work. I mean, they did the big bylaw rewrite a couple years ago, and we're still finding, you know, unintended consequences from changes that were made then. And so, I mean, the things that they're doing, we don't want to make knee-jerk changes to try to roll stuff back and then have those knee-jerk changes have other unintended consequences that we weren't thinking about. Because that's not really, I don't want to say it's not better. It's different. It might be the same. It might be worse. I don't know. We want people to think about, we want the board to think about what they're doing, and we want them to make the right decisions, whether they make those right decisions for the right reasons or not. Like, who was it? It was a Milton Friedman, I think, said that what you want is, it's not, you can't always get the right people in positions of power. What you want is you want to make it politically possible. You want the wrong people to have to be able to make the right decisions. And we kind of saw this when the live streams were first being voted on. You know, they were unanimous. You know, even quote the wrong people, Layton and the other the his cabal or faction, whatever you want to call it, they were voting in favor of the live streams. And it was like, that's good. It's like, it doesn't matter that they are what I or people who agree with me, what we think of as the wrong people. They're making the right decision, whether it's for the wrong reason or not. It's like, I don't care why you're making the decision. I just want you to make the right decision.
Well, Bill, that's what I've got. Was there anything that we touched on that you feel we need to go back to, or anything we didn't touch on?
I don't think so. We've had a pretty good discussion, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It'd be interesting to see what you think after watching Ken's Facebook Live. But
how long was it? How long did he talk?
It was 39 minutes and change, almost 40 minutes. It's like 39:54, I want to say.
Okay.
Plus or minus a couple seconds.
Yeah, I'll have to pull it up and watch it and see what he says.
Well, I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me.
And I hope we could, yeah, I'm hoping we could do this again sometime.
Okay, sounds good.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.